This is Fresh Air. As soon as actor Paul Winfield read Presumed Innocent, he knew he wanted the role of Judge Laron Little if the book was ever made into a movie. 3 years later, after intense lobbying, Winfield found out that he had the part. Paul Winfield has had a distinguished career on stage, on television, and in the movies. He was nominated for an Academy Award for his film debut in Sounder nearly 15 years ago. He's also been nominated twice for an Emmy Award for his role in Roots 2 and for his portrayal of Martin Luther King Jr. in the NBC special King. And this fall, Winfield will be the guest star in the first 4 episodes of L.A. Law. When we spoke recently, Paul Winfield told me why he thought the judge in Presumed Innocent would be such a wonderful part.
There are not many roles for blacks in major white motion pictures that, unless you're a sidekick or, you know, you're shooting helicopters out of the sky or those kind of things. And this was like a very grown-up adult part and a part that, and a judge and an intellectual and had some wit and power and all those wonderful things that rarely come down the pike.
How did you prepare for this part? And I assume with most parts, there's that opportunity at least to spend time with people to see how they work. And I was wondering whether you were able to do that in a courtroom to see from the judge's perspective how this works.
Well, Marty, it's very rarely done. You have a chance to rehearse. But in this case, the director, Pakula, and the studio actually paid us for 3 weeks rehearsal and research and stuff. So that meant that the actors playing lawyers talked to lawyers, the ones playing DAs talked to DAs, and I had a chance to meet some very wonderful, wonderful black judges, both in Detroit and in New York. And I'm really glad I did, because not only was I able to meet some really profound people, but it was also a lot of fun. It was a judge in Detroit, Judge Lipscomb, that I had came in for an interview, and he says, "Well, gee, I'm sort of running late, and I tell you what, why don't you just come out on the bench with me?" I said, "Well, is that legal?" He says, "Baby, it's my courtroom. I can do whatever I want. Here's a robe. Come out." So I sat right next to him, and of course, he introduced me to the litigants and said, "Well, this is this actor from Hollywood, and mm-hmm. he's doing a research for some movie, and if any of you object to him being here, we'll transfer you to another time." Well, of course, nobody wanted to go to another court, but they just wanted, I mean, because they thought maybe they could sort of put one over on this idiot from California masquerading as a judge.
What's the perspective, though, as you're sitting up at the level, the height of a judge? What's the perspective as you look down on the courtroom?
You got it. It's a very different perspective. It's there's something that really happens. There's a kind of power that just goes with the territory. It's very awesome. I mean, in a sense that you have now power over these people's lives. You're going to make decisions that's going to affect the rest of their lives, whether it's for a traffic ticket or whatever. It makes a difference in that courtroom and that whole society, saying this is the way you're supposed to behave, and these are the people who can decide what you're supposed to do. Well, when I had a chance to do it in my own bailiwick in a soundstage in Astoria Studios in New York, and it was a very impressive set, I didn't have to sort of conjure up what it felt like. I didn't have to try to figure out what it meant. I'd been there, and it was very, very helpful.
I hear Oscar rumors or Oscar murmurings. And
oh, Marty.
There have been other, with Sounder, you got an Oscar nomination, but I wonder what that means.
How is it different this time
around?
Well,
sure.
I haven't gotten it first. But, I mean, when I was, 20-something, 20, in my early 20s, and my first major picture, my first lead in a picture, and to get an Oscar nomination, I just assumed that they were going to be, this is going to happen every year. I was just on my way. It was just going to be just perfect from now on. I didn't do anything about it. I didn't do any sort of special campaigns. I didn't hire publicists. I didn't go to parties. I didn't do all those things that I now know that are somewhat important.
You have to really lobby them for the prize.
You have to really do that. And you say, "Well, but wait a minute. Don't I just deserve this?"
Uh-huh. Apparently not.
You have to remind people, and you have to say, "Well, you know, he's been around for 30 years now, and he's still not in a mental institution or at Betty Ford, and he's not in a poorhouse quite yet. But he's been doing his job for 30 years and is still doing it and enjoys it. So those are the only things I really want to remind people about. But it sounds very self-serving. But it does that Oscar does make a difference in one's career. It certainly didn't hurt Louis Gossett's. I mean, it's a much wider range of roles now than he had if he hadn't won it, I think.
So it's even perhaps even more important for
getting
minority
work.
Actors because of the limitation of so many of the roles.
Because so many people watch it and it gets so much attention and finally they start putting a name with the face. I mean, it's amazing. I go down streets in major cities and white people say, "Didn't I go to school with you? Don't I know you from... You drive the M Street bus, right?" And I said, no, I'm an actor. But black people, of course, know, "Hey, Paul." They know my name and they know what I've done. But for the greater, wider majority, I'm just somebody who's vaguely familiar. Mm.
You seem to move very easily from the stage to the screen to the television set. And you seem to be someone who has had few prejudices about what television can offer. I think some actors wouldn't deign to play to the small box and want the big screen or want the stage. But you don't seem to have those reservations.
No, I really don't. And I guess it's because I really enjoy my work. I mean, if it's an interesting part, and if it's something that is really going to stretch me and it's some sort of area of skill that I haven't really developed or want, like doing comedy, I started briefly in the beginning of my career doing the Julias with Diane Carroll. I played one of her many suitors. But that was a big lesson for me to probably like comedy and getting, because I was a stage actor, big and big performances, and trying to fit that performance into a little box was, and it's the only way you really ever find out is by doing it. And you, at least you're allowed to fail a few times, but you can't fail too many times. But I learned pretty quick, so that's one. Just learning how to act in front of a TV camera is one thing.
Well, does that mean that somehow your movements are smaller for the TV?
Much smaller. Yeah, it's much more intimate. Mm. And it's, I've worked with actors. I mean, and I say, "God, they're not doing anything." And I start acting bigger and giving more. And then I see the piece, and they're perfect. She's got just a little gleam in her eye. We're having a fight, say.
Right.
She's got just a little gleam in her eye, and I look like a raving maniac. I mean, it's because I'm...
Well, you're on a stage, aren't you, at that point?
On stage, sure, right. But it is a special kind of... technique. Mm. Let's put it down. Talent probably has something to do with it too, but there is a technique in all the different mediums. Some people are I've seen people wonderful on the stage and on TV, on movies. There's just nothing there. You say, "Well, I don't understand. I mean, they were so good on when I saw them doing O'Neill or this," and then they're just nothing there.
Mm. You turned down a scholarship to the Yale Drama School. Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
And I guess for many aspiring actors, that would be some kind of a ticket.
Well, it wasn't, it was not a full scholarship. It was just books and tuition. Now, when I left, I got another scholarship to where I had relatives in the University of Portland. But when I left, my parents gave me a $50 bill and said, "Good luck and goodbye."
How old were you?
I was 18, 19, And the brochure, I remember them saying, "Well, it's an hour away by train to New York and blah, 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 and it's at Yale." And I said, "Well, but I'd have to buy clothes, I'd have to have a part-time job, and I'd also have to keep up my academic side. And also in the theater department, you have rehearsals and performances at night, so when do you have this part-time job? Mm-hmm. And when do you buy clothes and food and books and all that stuff?" So it was it wasn't that hard a decision. And also, it was 3,000 miles away from home and anybody I knew. And that part was pretty scary. But basically, it was economic, that sort of reason I turned it down. If it had been a little bit more, might have done it. But living with aunts and uncles, and they could sort of slip me $10 occasionally, helped a lot.
When did you actually begin to act? And was this something that happened in high school or even before that?
Well, as I said, we were not very wealthy, in fact, very poor. And so we moved around a lot. Because my dad was in construction, and wherever the job was, that's where we went. So it was like, you know, you'd go to a new school, and you'd have to start making friends all over again. And sometimes, after a while, it became harder. It was easier just to sort of escape into books. I mean, they became my best friends, and I knew they'd be waiting at the next library. That sort of fantasy life that you could, without dealing with real people and the things you do as a grown-up.
And I guess also the heartache of leaving friends once
you've
made
them. And leaving friends and having to start that process all over again, it just became easier to just read a book. And but in my senior year in junior high school, I was cast in a play. I got into a play somehow. And I had several lines, but one line that really sort of suddenly brought down the house. I said, I still remember it to this day. I said, "Jumpin' Jehoshaphat." And somehow, for some reason, it just stopped the show. Uh-huh. And for the rest of that summer, particularly young ladies would come up to me and says, "Hey, weren't you that guy in that play?" I said, "Yeah." "Say that line for me. Just say it one more time." I said, "Okay. Jumpin' Jehoshaphat." And we would laugh. And they said, "You know, we're giving a party this Saturday. Maybe you'd like to..." What an entree.
Yeah.
I mean, what an easy way to get attention and to get friends. So I stuck with it.
So does it still work now?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, Lauren Little and the judge is actually the same guy who's doing Jumpin' Jehoshaphat.
Yeah.
It gets that same attention. It gets that same uncritical affection.
Actor Paul Winfield is my guest today. I'm wondering, and you kind of alluded to this before, about the limited number of roles to black actors. And I understand that in a Tennessee Williams play, The Glass Menagerie, you had to play it in whiteface. And I guess, was this to somehow please the producers? Or first of all, when was all this?
This was in, the early 70s. It was a federally funded project to do plays. There were three theaters, one in New Orleans, one in Connecticut, and one in Los Angeles, to do plays for every high school student in that county over a period of 3 years. I was hired in the first company in L.A., the first year, rather, and we would do the classics, Molière, Tennessee Williams, whatever. But they bus in these kids at 10 o'clock in the morning to see something touching like Glass Menagerie. But I think 10 actors were hired. I was the first production cause. Andre Gregory was the first artistic director in L.A. Tartuffe in Spanish California, and Louis Gossett played the Tartuffe, George Gaines, and played Oregon, and it was cowboys and Indians, basically, in a Spanish setting. Well, the kids loved it, but the school teacher said, "Well, wait a minute, where are all these periwigs and things? I mean, it's not the same as in the book." He said, "Well, it never is the same. That's why you put it on a stage, to sort of bring it to life." But when I was cast as a gentleman caller, that really broke the camel's back. They just said, wait a minute. For a son to bring home a black man for his crippled sister and his mother is a Southern belle, it would be an act of cruelty. It's nothing kind about this. And so that would maybe destroy the fabric of the play. Andre Gregory was fired immediately. Gregory Peck, who was on the board, said, "Well, he's the best actor for the part." I said, "Well, yes, but..." He said, well, if the only objection is the color of his skin, let's change the color of his skin." So out of his own pocket, he paid. I went to 20th Century Fox every morning. They invented a new makeup. Ben Nye had a Winfield opaque. It sort of blocked out my color. It had a nose, contact lenses.
They made you a new nose?
A new nose, yes, to sort of make a sort of more aquiline. Put on this very thin base that sort of took out all the color. And then they painted on a new face, on my face.
Whoa.
But it was, and it apparently worked. At first, I mean, when my parents, I didn't tell my parents about this, and mm-hmm. they came to see it, and they were, didn't know it was me until they heard me talk for a while. But the point was, I knew how white people acted. I mean, I've been around them all my life, for Christ's sake, and I knew this character very well. So I felt I should have had the opportunity to play him and interpret him. That's what my job is. So we did. And after the play, we would take off the wig, take out the contact lenses, take off the nose, take off the makeup in front of the kids, and then we would discuss it, why we had to do this, if it was necessary. And they had a lot of feedback, a lot of interesting thoughts about it.
Are there more or less roles, would you say, for black actors from the beginning of your career to now? Have you seen any kind of change where you're given more variety, more depth, breadth of character than...
When you first started out. Yeah, it's sad to say. And it's such a... I feel like I keep harping on this. But it's just not really very much difference. It's some of our... And I say this with all respect. Our comedians, our clowns are very wealthy. But in terms of actors, no. There are very few roles. But, I mean... But clowns have always been favorites. And they'll always be... There'll always be a place for them. But for actors, no. It's who want to do more than just one thing. It's mm-hmm. it's harder, and it's and it seems to be getting harder every year. We keep looking forward to sort of other avenues, venues, other. I said, well, you know, when cable came out, this is going to make the big difference. I mean, we can then put our efforts into a smaller audience, to a more select group of people, of people who are interested in black actors or their stories and stuff. Well, it's been a long, hard time coming, and it still is. They're still going for the lowest common denominator, and it's still television as usual. Serious plays are very rarely done, except for August Wilson, are done and Broadway, it then means that you have a life in regional theater, and that's it.
Well, Paul Winfield, I've really enjoyed talking with you, and I thank you very much.
Thank you, Marty.
Actor Paul Winfield, he portrays Judge Laron Little in the movie Presumed Innocent. He will guest star in the first four episodes of L.A. Law this fall.